Hey folks, it's Dana. Make sure that you pre-order your copy of my latest book, Grace Canceled, out February 25th. Go to danalash.com or danaradio.com and pre-order today. If you've listened to my show, you know I really take super beats every day, but sometimes I get so caught up in my busy schedule that I can forget. And that's why I'm excited to tell you guys about their fantastic new product, Super Beats Soft Chews. Super Beats Soft Chews gives me all of the potent heart health benefits of Super Beats packed into two delicious soft chews that I can take with me wherever I go. And Super Beats Soft Chews comes with a new breakthrough ingredient, grapeseed extract, that supports normal blood pressure, circulation, and natural energy in your body. They use highly concentrated premium grape seeds sourced only from the world-renowned Loire Valley in France. The grape seed extract used in Super Beats Soft Chews was clinically studied and shown to support healthy blood pressure levels. Get your Super Beats Soft Chews today at danasbeats.com or call 800-664-5617. And when you buy two bags, they'll throw in the third bag for free. That's danasbeats.com, 800-664-5617.
Something
now, we have released, I think, Anderson, quite as much as any other candidate has. We received, released two rather detailed letters from cardiologists, and we received, released a letter that came from the head of the U.S. Congress medical group, the physicians there. So I think we have released a detailed report, and I'm comfortable with what we have done.
Okay, so why in the world is Bernie Sanders talking about releasing medical records? Because he and Mike Bloomberg are having a heart attack off. This is where we are today, everybody. Hi, I'm Dana Lash. We made it to Wednesday, but I don't know what's going to happen after that. I feel like this is just some insight on what we can expect in tonight's debate. So that's why you're like, why is he talking about? Because they're having a heart attack off. They're literally arguing about heart attacks. We're going to talk about that and a lot of other stuff. Welcome to the show. I'm Dana Lash at DLash on the Twitters. Official Dana Lash on Facebook as well. And don't forget, we stream all 3 hours for all of you so that we can just, you can just pull us right up in your cubicle or at your kitchen table or wherever you happen to be. All 3 hours on Official Dana Lash on Facebook. Also on YouTube on Channel 248 on Pluto TV via the first. Okay, so let's get into it. Tonight's the debate. It is the debate in Nevada, and it's the debate in Nevada ahead of the caucuses on Saturday. But in reality, it's the everyone kick the crap out of Mike Bloomberg fight. That's what it is. It's trying to figure out how best I can demonstrate what tonight is going to be like visually. Have you ever seen Death Proof? I'm going to bring this tugboat to shore, but bear with me. If you haven't, it's one of my favorite chick flicks in the history of chick flicks. It's a Quentin Tarantino movie, and there's fighting and stunts. It's amazing. And one of the most epic stunts involving, what was it, a 71 Challenger?
I think so.
Yeah, it's amazing. Anyway, long story short, Kurt Russell's in this movie. I like anything Kurt Russell's in. And the dialogue is great, and there's even some Second Amendment defense in this movie, which is pretty awesome, too. But at the very end, the bad guy gets his at the hands of the innocent people that he was trying to get. And it's basically, they're out in the middle of the nowhere on a road, and they're all taking turns kicking this guy to the ground. That is pretty much the visual for tonight's debate. That's kind of how it's going to go. If any of the stuff that we've been seeing lately is indicative of anything. So here's where we are. So we have this debate this evening, and we also have some of the latest polling as well, which shows that Bloomberg is still doing well. But I think also, and keep this in mind, and I said all of this at the very beginning when, really at the beginning of any race. I said this back in 2008. I said this back in 2012. And I've not ever been incorrect on this. Some of this with Bloomberg, money, I swear I'm having like the most intense feeling of deja vu right now. It's insane. Really? It's crazy. Like I feel like we've had this conversation before, which in some ways we have. It is the lack of name recognition beyond kind of what people know of him culturally, pop culturally, that is fueling, I think, some interest in him. And whenever you would have candidates that would kind of that at least have like that level of identification that get into the race, there's always this immediate little bump that they have. Now, what's going to happen is March 3rd. I think after the debate tonight, we're going to get a little bit more perspective on it. And definitely after March 3rd, we'll get some more perspective on it. And we'll sort of figure out the lay of the land and how much this is actually going to stick. So I wanted to look at some of the polling really quickly ahead of tonight's debate, because right now the average of the national polling has Sanders up by 11, and he's led every single poll. He's been on an increase. He's actually on an upward track, and I'm looking at it right now. Biden has been doing horribly these past, obviously, couple of weeks. Warren has hit her slump. Buttigieg has, he's, I think now he hit his peak and he's now on a descent. And Bloomberg is on a high right now. So nationally, as it stands right now, Sanders is the front runner, followed by Biden. And right behind Biden, it's Bloomberg. Now, these are just some of the latest polls. Now, when I look at Nevada, when I look at South Carolina, California, Texas, Sanders and Biden dominate these polls. And Sanders is still the front runner. Bloomberg is catching up, and I have some fascinating headlines about how he's spending his money too, by the way, to influence this. You're going to fall over when you hear some of this. But looking at, let me pull up some of these state polls too. In Nevada, he made the debate stage, but he's really been focusing everything on Super Tuesday. That's where he's focused absolutely all of everything at. And Biden, his last stand is going to be in South Carolina. So this is, as we're going into it, Bernie's up. Bloomberg, he and Bloomberg are going. Bloomberg's picking a fight with him. And strategically, that's smart, because he's trying to position himself as the moderate, I know, air quotes, moderate, compared to Bernie Sanders. But Michael Bloomberg is just like Bernie Sanders. He's no moderate. He loves capitalism for him, but doesn't like it for anybody else. So you're not a capitalist and you're not a moderate and you're not an anti-socialist if you're only for free and fair markets for yourself. That's not how that's measured. Anyway, looking at some of the I've got some pre-debate stuff too. So Michael Bloomberg has apparently been prepping for this debate, and he's been arguing with debating some of his staffers, and they're trying to get him ready, because one of the big fears is that someone on stage is going to make him mad, and then he's going to look like an angry old dude. That's the big fear. And it's going to be because he's Bernie's age. He's a year older than Bernie, because isn't Bernie 77? I don't know how old he is. How old is he? Bernie Sanders is like 77.
Bernie's 78.
He's 78.
This September, he'll be 79.
Okay.
I don't know with Bloomberg how old
he is. He's old. So they're both, as far as optics are concerned, they're both old white dudes, right? And they both get mad. They both kind of, Bernie always yells, and Bloomberg gets a very curt tone, and he is, he's just not seen, we talked about this yesterday, as somebody who's amiable. I don't know how the rest of them are going to like keep in this race. I don't know how Amy Klobuchar is going to squeeze in, because everyone is now, Bernie has the advantage of having already called dibs on one of the ideologies, and it happens to be the ideology that's dominating the Democrat Party. He's got dibs on that. All the other cats have got to fight it out to see who is the anti-Bernie. They have to present a clear choice. The problem is none of them are. I think out of all of them, Amy Klobuchar might be maybe one of the closest. She might be the closest, really, honestly, ideologically, and policy-wise. Amy Klobuchar might actually be the closest to the anti-Bernie that they have in the primary. No joke. Because Pete Buttigieg is Bernie Sanders, but just on a slower timetable. Elizabeth Warren is Bernie Sanders, just on a slower timetable. Michael Bloomberg is Bernie Sanders on a slower timetable. They're all the same. There's some differences as it goes with healthcare, some taxation issues, energy issues, and whether or not certain industries should be nationalized, which is something a lot of the candidates support. And Klobuchar has spoke against it. Who was it? Bennett? I think Bennett was one of the guys who kind of spoke against that as well. And wasn't he fighting? They both, I think, had the same position as it concerned nationalized health care. So that is, this is where we are. I mean, that's where we are. Oh, man. You know I'm going to be watching this tonight. We got more Bloomer drama, everybody. So there's lots more Bloomer drama. Now, I didn't get into it. I actually wasn't sassy. Sometimes I just seem sassy when I'm actually not. But I was having a back and forth. I'm trying to pull this up with somebody the other day. And they told me that basically that my criticism on Bloomberg's remarks yesterday, the audio that we played where he said, oh, well, basically black men and Latino men don't want to work and all this. That's what he said. I mean, that's pretty much just how he was putting it. And I if you go to danalash.com, I'm getting ready to add another thing to it like right now. There's a huge list of all the Bloomberg oppo that's up there. Everything dumb that he's ever said, every dumb policy that he's ever pushed, all the audio of it, the list of things that he's banned, everything that you wanted to know about him, it's up there. I'll put it up again on Facebook. And one individual was saying, well, you know, it's not very, it's a little disingenuous for you to present his remarks on these dudes like that. This is what he's saying. First off, I think it's disingenuous for anyone to act like that remark or any singular remark that Bloomberg has made is somehow the exception and not the rule. It is completely indicative of his behavioral pattern. And I said this. I go, it's mischaracterization to present only one of his comments, which was a bad comment. There's no matter how you slice it, it was a bad comment, as some sort of exception when it's a characteristic endemic to his behavioral pattern, the record of which goes back many a year. Goes back a long time. Here's another one. Michael Bloomberg told Rolling Stone in 2014, if you want to have a gun in your house, I think you're pretty stupid. I'm giving a direct quote. That's a direct quote. Yeah. I'll link that up on the Bloomberg Oppo list, too. Well, we kind of already known that, but I love it that he just, like, puts it in so frank a manner. So that was another fun thing that he said. So if he's not bashing farmers because he doesn't understand how agriculture, how farming works, if he's not bashing and being a bigot towards law-abiding people who want to be able to defend themselves with their natural right of the Second Amendment, if he is not looking down upon the poor, saying that government exists to provide services and let's tax them out of their discretionary income so they can't purchase things that I think will hurt them, if he's always his bigotry of people who are not in his socioeconomic status is that informs his policy. It is absolutely endemic to his behavioral pattern of bigotry. There is no way to argue it otherwise. And he also said, and I retweeted this yesterday, he also had said previously that, and this was an audio, this was a soundbite that he had like some time ago, where he had said that he would have to change his ideas. If he wanted to run, he would have to change his ideas. He would have to change, you know, everything in order to actually be able to win an election. And guess what? He's done that. He's changing everything so he can win because he is so enamored with popularity and power. He's a tyrant. And all the tyrants are going to fight tonight. Everybody's going to kung fu fight tonight. That's how it's going to happen. I have a lot more on this, y'all. We're going to get into the heart attack stuff because they apparently are now feuding over that. I don't know if that's going to come up in the debate tonight. I would imagine that at this point it's going to, because Sanders said they had all the town halls yesterday. He's like, he's not going to release his medical records. And then Bloomberg was going at him saying, well, you know, you should. And Bernie responded, well, Bloomberg had irregular heartbeats and stents, but I've seen no, he said that. And so they've been going back and forth. So we have that. I also have a column that's coming out that is titled Political Jesus because of what Pete Buttigieg said in his CNN town hall yesterday. And we're going to talk about it. Where he's trying to say if you're voting for Trump, basically you can't be a Christian. I mean, that's the underlying spirit of what he said. We're going to discuss that as well. We have a lot to get you ready for tonight, so you don't want to go nowhere. If you've listened to my show, you know I really take super beats every day, but sometimes I get so caught up in my busy schedule that I can forget. And that's why I'm excited to tell you guys about their fantastic new product, Super Beats Soft Chews. Super Beats Soft Chews gives me all of the potent heart health benefits of Super Beats packed into two delicious soft chews that I can take with me wherever I go. And Super Beats Soft Chews comes with a new breakthrough ingredient, grapeseed extract, that supports normal blood pressure, circulation, and natural energy in your body. They use highly concentrated premium grape seeds sourced only from the world-renowned Loire Valley in France. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Soft Chews was clinically studied and shown to support healthy blood pressure levels. Get your Super Beats Soft Chews today at danasbeats.com or call 800-664-5617. And when you buy two bags, they'll throw in the third bag for free. That's danasbeats.com, 800-664-5617.
Watch all 3 hours of The Dana Show live on Facebook, YouTube, or The First, Channel 248 on Pluto TV.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss.
It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
If you follow me on Twitter, I actually just tweeted this out. This is ridiculously amazing. This violinist played Gershwin, Mahler, and more to save her ability to play the violin as surgeons removed a brain tumor. It was in the British hospital, and she played her violin. Doctors asked her to so they could preserve her ability to play, and she's played for 40 years. Dagmar Turner, 53, with the Isle of Wight. She played it during the entire operation so that they could take this tumor out of the right frontal lobe of her brain, right by the area that controls the fine movement of the hand. And so they wanted her to play as they did it, so they could preserve that as best as they could. And so it worked. That's insane. Holy cow. How cool is that, right? That's pretty awesome. Let's see here. Free reign no longer. The State Department is cracking down on Chinese media now working in the United States. And this is one of there's a couple of steps similar to this. The Washington Times says that the Senate Department imposed restrictions yesterday on Chinese media, saying that they should be treated as virtual arms of the communist government in Beijing, which that's what their media is really in China. The restrictions were placed on several news agencies, including China Global Television, China Radio International, China Daily, which is the owner of the Communist Party of China's outlet, China Daily, and the People's Daily, also owned by the Communist Party of China. So there you go. There's not really much of a distinction, except, I guess, which communists own it. Yeah. Let me pull this up. I thought this was kind of just it's not NBA star LeBron James. He was talking about the Houston Astros controversy, and he said he would be infuriated if he found out that an opposing team cheated to win a title. OK, but why does he have harsher words for them than he ever did for China?
Yep.
Just curious about that. And we have a lot more in store, including coming up, political Jesus, Pete Buttigieg, and the double stance on his faith and what he's saying about it with regards to Trump. Stick with us.
Follow Dana on Twitter at DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
Do you think it is impossible to be a Christian and support President Trump?
Well, I'm not going to tell other Christians how to be Christians, but I will say I cannot find any compatibility between the way this president conducts himself and anything that I find in scripture. Now, I guess that's my interpretation, but I think that's a lot of people's interpretation, and that interpretation deserves a...
He says that interpretation deserves a voice. That was Pete Buttigieg last night at CNN's Town Hall. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Good to have you today. He tried to reach out and touch faith last night during that CNN Town Hall, and he was asked, as you heard, by Aaron Burnett on Trump and Christianity. And I have addressed this, but from the Republican conservative perspective, the perspective of people who are not Trump supporters and, you know, like the crystal cons who think that the best way to support their principles is to vote for someone who is actually opposite everything that they say that they're voting for, because they think that sinning on the way to virtue is the way to go. I don't know. But as it relates to Buttigieg, and we've discussed this before, but I wanted to really get into this as it relates to that soundbite, because I'm kind of tired of him using disingenuously faith as a cudgel. Because when he does it, first off, he represents it very exclusively, which is not the spirit of how you're supposed to do it. But he was asked, do you think it's possible to be a Christian and to support Trump? And he says, well, I'm not going to tell other Christians how to be Christians, but I'm going to tell other Christians how to be Christians. That's what he said. That's what he's saying. When he says he can't find any compatibility between the way this president conducts himself and anything else that he finds in scripture, I'll just tell you, there are a lot of ways that people act every day that are incompatible with how we're supposed to act according to scripture. I mean, thank goodness we have grace, right? Make sure you pre-order my book, Grace Canceled, which is available at bookstores to pre-order everywhere. It comes out next week. Good thing that we have grace and forgiveness, though, right? Because that's where that comes in, because we are weak. We are weak humans, and so we are prone to sin. We are sinners. And so we all do things that are incompatible with how scripture tells us to live. But the problem is that Pete Buttigieg believes that everybody else's sin is up for discussion except his own. Everyone else is a sinner, but not political Jesus. And he cites Trump's behavior, but what of his own? What of Pete Buttigieg's behavior? Now, I have a piece that's coming out on this today, because scripture is incredibly clear on how we are supposed to behave, how we even witness to other people, how we help people. It's incredibly clear also on the discussion of sin and that everyone sins. And he likes to say over and over again, and he said this before, there's other sound bites of him saying this. I think he said it on the campaign trail. He's said it in town halls. He's has said it in debates, that God doesn't have a political party. And that's true. Yeah, God doesn't have a political party, but God does have commandments. And these are commandments that he wants upheld. These are commandments that conflict with the policies like late-term abortion and post-birth abortion and partial birth abortion, policies that Buttigieg and his party have been trying to normalize as mainstream Christian doctrine while they pass judgment on the manner in which Trump tweets. If you'd like some citations on that, I'll point you to Luke 6:41 as to how we should be dealing with it. If his positions, Buttigieg says that, and he said in this clip that his positions are informed by his faith, I would know it from his positions. I wouldn't, would you? What positions does he have that are informed by faith? He can cite the scripture all he wants to, but does he follow it? Because the power isn't in citing it, it's in following it. That's 1 Corinthians 4:20, by the way, in case anyone wants to know that. I just feel like if you're going to sit here and use and lecture on faith, then it should be from a faith base, not a political perspective, right? It's not those who hear the law that are righteous, but those who obey the law that will be declared righteous. Romans 2:13. Now, he was discussing the interpretation of that interpretation of Trump's conduct deserves a voice by way of Trump being president and by way of Trump running for president. But if that is true, then again, so does Buttigieg's. And if he's choosing scripture as the litmus test, then so by scripture, should he be judged by his actions as well? I mean, this is the thing. I'm going to share with you an excerpt from Grace Canceled, which is my book, How Outrage is Destroying Lives, Ending Debate and Endangering Democracy, because I get into the death of redemption. I get into nuance. I get into social justice warriorism in the church and the president and faith. And this is what I wrote about it. And this is a quick excerpt. There has been a fight between two factions of the right regarding faith and Trump. And it goes something like this. One faction believes, I write, that support for Trump is a nullification of Christian faith because support is endorsement of all Trump's previously reported on bad behaviors. It's an argument that would make the Pharisees proud. It's impossible to separate the good policy Trump has proposed from the sins of which he stood accused. If you're really Christian, some in this faction assert, you'll condemn him wholly and outright. Trump, they claim, is unfit for office because he is morally compromised. He's bossy and loud, they say, even on Twitter. And he mocks women's appearances and he criticizes dead veterans and he attends every fight to which he's invited. He's a sinner. True, and yet it doesn't disqualify him from office. The other faction believes that Trump, like all mankind, is a sinner, but that God has a purpose for everyone. Some preachers and pastors and holy folk in this particular group have appeared on various cable news networks as character witnesses of sorts for either Trump or Christian voters, and more than a few have suggested that Trump is in the White House because God put him there and God can use him. And the wing of the right who claim that you can't be both a Christian and a Trump supporter scoffed at these assertions and accused these evangelicals of compromising their faith for power. It is a specious claim that misunderstands not only what these Christian leaders have stated, but it also overlooks the omnipotence of God in the Bible. And the premise argued is that God can't use Trump because he is flawed. This contradicts the teaching you claim to uphold. This contradicts the faith you claim to have. This contradicts the scripture you cite and the Bible that you say you read. Because the most flawed people in the Bible were called by God into his service for his glory, and he alone will raise up, and he alone will equip those that he calls for these tasks. He called Saul of Tarsus a murderous, brutal man. He hunted Christians down. He was called the wolf who stalked the lambs. That preceded him everywhere he went, all around the world, and he turned into one of the most important figures in the post-apostolic period, one of the greatest of the faith. God called David, he called Judah, and through a line of some of the most corrupt and sinful men in biblical history came Jesus. And it's all to prove not the power of you, but the power of the one you serve. And to argue that people cannot be used is to deny the omnipotence of God. Now you tell me if that is your stance, if faith informs your position. God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. It's in Romans. So that's an excerpt. And that applies to this argument too. I mean, I think, and I have actually, for a really long time, I avoided even like not really even discussing at great length or even writing about anything faith-based in a long time, because I have personal rules on that. I think that if you're going to sit here and you're going to talk to people about faith, you need to spend more time in scripture than you do talking to people about it. You need to spend more time studying the word than you do writing words about it. You need to be more mature in the faith. And I think that people have a responsibility to temper their tones, and not everybody can do it. Because people get, it's so tribal. And that's how Pete Buttigieg is too. He's gone off on Mike Pence 6 ways to Sunday for what? Mike Pence has done nothing but have been kind to him. He has spoken nicely of him. He attacks Mike Pence simply because Mike Pence in his private life and publicly too, he is a Christian. And it's not enough that he's nice to everyone. It's not enough that he loves everyone. He is not an acceptable Christian unless he stops being a disciple and becomes a casual observer. It's a good to be a Christian when it's convenient for him politically. That is not the way to go about it. So that's where he's disingenuous, Buttigieg, in all of this. And I'll tell you, everybody does themselves a disservice with so much of this. Because, you know, when you're talking about correction like this, it shouldn't come from a place of maliciousness, and it shouldn't come from a place of hatefulness. And so often it does. And I get it, because people mess up. I mean, hi, who are you talking to right now? But it's supposed to be from a place of caring, right? Because it's really easy to like people who like you. It's really easy to love people who love you. It's really easy to be kind to people who are kind to you, who agree with you, who don't challenge you, who don't dissent with your opinions, people who provide no such hurdle to your viewpoints and your narrative. But what sacrifice is that for you? So I call shenanigans on Pete Buttigieg here. And like I said, I can't tell which of his positions are informed by his faith. But I can tell you this. The measure by which you judge, so will you be judged. Gotta be careful of that. It'll be interesting to see how he performs in tonight's Nevada debate. And also kind of, I think, how he performs in the caucuses as well. a couple of other things on this as well. I have, I don't think Bernie Sanders cares anymore. There's a very interesting piece that is over at the Daily Caller that gets into one of Bernie Sanders's, it was a featured speaker at one of his rallies in Seattle. And her name is Kashama Sawant, and she's a member of the Socialist Alternative. It's a Trotskyist group, and it advocates for nationalization of banks, not just nationalization of banks, but seizing them and then nationalizing the banks. And she called for a, quote, powerful socialist movement to end all capitalist oppression and exploitation. Interesting. He doesn't care anymore, and she's just out there saying all of this stuff. She was at a rally, an official Bernie Sanders rally. He is everything that free people, people who support free markets, everything just embodied in one politician that we oppose without any of the experience to go along. I will say this, at least Tom Steyer made his own money. At least Michael Bloomberg made his own money. Bernie Sanders didn't make his own money. He takes your money. You tell me right now how a man who's only ever had a government job and who has only ever, he's worked in what? Literally government job from the time he entered the workforce to now. How is he a millionaire several times over? Does anybody want to explain that? How does he have three homes? And I don't mean just like three. One's a cabin. One's a ranch. No, I mean like big homes. How does he have this? His wife bankrupted a damn girls' school, for crying out loud. Excuse the French. But where? How is this? Where does he get this? There you go. So, it'll be interesting tonight's debate. Because I wonder if anything like that's going to come up. He's got to, and I'm curious to see on whose side the moderators fall. Aren't you? We have a lot coming up. You don't want to miss it. We're going to get into all of that and look ahead at some Super Tuesday stuff as well. Warren is gunning for Bloomberg in tonight's debate. And then we have the latest on coronavirus and a very interesting story regarding China. They revoked the press credentials of three journalists from the Wall Street Journal because Wall Street Journal refused to apologize for a column that was critical of Beijing. I'm going to compare Wall Street Journal's reaction on this to how Bloomberg News reacted to China complaining about critical coverage of their policies in Bloomberg News. We're going to discuss that as well.
A higher caliber of talk. Get Dana on demand through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Will you condemn the Bernie bro behavior?
I will condemn absolutely anybody, including my campaign or any other campaign, that makes vicious personal attacks against people.
Well, then why hasn't he done it? I mean, for real, why hasn't he done it? Bernie bro, you know what Bernie bros sounds like? Bernie bros sounds like a cover group of unemployed white Bernie supporters who live at home still. And they're like in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s. And they still live at home. And they do Beastie Boys covers horrifically. That's what it sounds like. Yeah. And I would even say that the Step Brothers and Step Brothers, the Will Ferrell movie and John C. Reilly movie, were more talented with their musical excursions than the Bernie Bro Beastie Boy cover band. Just came to me. It was just a thought.
Love it.
Feel like there needs to be like a good cover band for every single uber niched demo, you know? Needs to. Coming up in our... Actually, we got a lot coming up next. We have... It just kind of rolled through here. There are a couple of things that are sticking out, including this story. Apparently, the Wall Street Journal says Apple is not going to meet the revenue guidance for quarter one due to the effect of the coronavirus outbreak on its supply chain in China and decreased demand for its products. Ooh. feel like I need to buy more water purification systems or something. That I'm just saying, I'm just gonna put that out there, you know, just gonna lay that right out there. It's odd. So we got Florida Man coming up. We're going to discuss that. We're also going to get into how the Washington Post said that a source told them that a source said that someone told them an official source said that Bill Barr was going to be quitting over them Trump tweets. But then Barr was like, mm-mm. So we need to walk this back, walk this down. We're going to do that. We're going to look at that. And suddenly a lot of people are interested in the Logan Act now. We'll discuss that too. Stick with us.
Dana Show.
This segment of the Dana Show podcast is brought to you by Kel-Tec. They don't make ordinary firearms, they invent better ones. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Visit them at keltecweapons.com.
Fellow Aquarians, I just want you to know that we are thoughtful, we are independent, and even keel. And it will not surprise you to know that our current president is not an Aquarian, he's a Gemini. I knew you wouldn't be surprised.
What's a Gemini?
A cricket?
It's a new way to say the name Jimmy, Kane. I'm going to rustle your Geminis.
Come on.
Welcome to the show. Welcome back. I'm Dana Lash, at DLash on Twitter, official. Dana Lash on Facebook. And all 3 hours streaming on YouTube and Facebook. And also channel 248, Pluto TV, via the first. Where to start? He has so many awkward, he's awkward. He's one of the most awkward people I've ever seen in my life. Ever. It takes effort to be that awkward. No one is that awkward naturally. I'm surprised he's not advertising that. Like it's a get, right? I'm the most awkward candidate out there. Oh my word. So let me see here. Because they're all going to be going for him. Never show your cards right before the debate either. You got to keep them guessing. You got to keep them guessing. Never, ever show your cards, especially Geminis. That's never going to go away. yeah. Somebody's going to give him a crystal and he'll try to ground it into salt or something. Watch. He'll try to put it in his, one of his like Dean and DeLuca salt grinders or something. Diamond crusted, just because I can buy a diamond crusted salt grinder. Anyway, a salt mill, yes. So Elizabeth Warren is showing her cards because she just doesn't know how to strategize. She's been yelling at him all week. Nobody knows because nobody's paying attention. Nobody's watching it at all. She attacked him. She started attacking him last week, and she said that she tore into him. She said, quote, it's a shame Mike Bloomberg can buy his way into the debate. And she said that Democrats should be cautious. And she's not happy. She's going to go for him. And again, it's just not. She's also been targeting. She's been going after Bernie Sanders as well. In this audio sound by 20, where she said, oh, he's got to answer about his supporters' behavior. Well, suddenly now they're asking this. They could have been asking this for a long time, but now just now. Listen.
I think Bernie has a lot of questions to answer here, and I am particularly worried about what happened to the attacks on members of the Culinary Union, making very aggressive threats against their own safety and the safety of their families.
Do you hear how she said that? Very aggressive threats. Do you believe that she's genuine in this concern? No, neither do I. I don't either. If you're only just now concerned about it, then you're not a genuine person who's concerned about this. This is not a genuine concern that you have. It really isn't. It's not at all. But this is insane. But she's yelling at Bernie. Bernie doesn't care. Bernie, so far, he and Bloomberg, the two people that she's been yelling the most at, are entirely ignoring her. Instead, they're arguing with each other over heart attacks. Audio soundbite 28, literally.
And it's really telling, given that none of the same concern is being demonstrated for Michael Bloomberg, who's the same age as Bernie Sanders, who has suffered heart attacks in the past.
Same age. They're both old dudes. That's Bernie's a Bernie spokesperson. Mm-hmm. And he told, Bernie told at CNN's town hall last night, he told Anderson Cooper, yeah, I'm not going to, we played that for you. I'm not going to release any more of this stuff. I'm not going to release it. Not going to happen. He's just, this is just so crazy. They're arguing over this. This is what, it started last night and they've been going back and forth over it. Even on social media, they've been going back and forth over it because why not? And that's when they said, that's when Bloomberg's people said, well, you know, or Sanders's people said Bloomberg was the same age. We're the same age. And he had, what did they say, that he had an irregular heartbeat and then he had stents and all this stuff. So they're, I don't know if he did or not, but they're 77-year-old billionaires yelling at each other about their heart attacks or lack thereof. I don't know.
78?
Yeah. So, well, he's going to be 78.
I think Bloomberg just turned 78 in February 14th, as a matter of fact.
Bernie Sanders saying, well, because I'm not going to show you my records now. I'm trying to get better at his voice because I feel like it's going to be around for a while. Doesn't that kind of suggest that there is something bad in them? Right? Did everybody else get that too? I'm just saying. But trust Bernie.
How can they be that good, though?
Honestly. Feel the heartburn. What? How can they what?
How can his medical records be that good? I mean, he recently suffered a heart attack.
Well, so, yeah.
I mean, I can see why he wouldn't want to show everything.
They're still going. And then his spokesperson came out and said, she tweeted, this was after her hit. Her TV hit. I misspoke when I said Bloomberg had a heart attack. Rather, he underwent the same stent procedure as Bernie. What? She said Bernie released 3 detailed medical reports, just like the other candidates. And then she added, before he was elected mayor in 2001, Bloomberg had surgery to have 2 stents implanted and et cetera, et cetera. But she was totally fine with saying Bernie. So wait, if she knew that somebody had to tell her that he had, I guess, a stent procedure, did she not know that her candidate, for whom she is spokesperson, had a stent procedure during the campaign? Are they trying to downplay a heart attack into that? That's what I don't know, right? Isn't that sound sketchy?
Yes.
No, I mean, I misspoke. He had the same stent procedure as Bernie. You said he had a heart attack. And then you kind of were, you didn't mention that when you were going back and forth on TV about it. It's just weird. Super weird. This is totally going to come up in the debate tonight. Are you guys going to pop popcorn? Because I am. I don't know. I'm curious as to how many punches 77 and 78-year-olds can throw, like, in a span of however long this debate is before they tire out. But I'm just saying. So they're arguing over that. Meanwhile, there's more Bloomer drama. I have so much for you on this. I don't even know where I want to go. Because there's so much to get into. It's insane. The 2 things here with Bloomer. The first is that he is now getting criticism for remarks that he made that had to do with trans people. Let me pull this up. Yeah, and I guess there's audio of this that's out there. This came by way of BuzzFeed. It said, newly uncovered video shows Democratic presidential candidate Mike Bloomberg in 2019 describing transgender people as he, she, or it, and some guy in a dress who enters girls' locker rooms. And they write, invoking a conservative cliche as he argued that transgender rights are toxic for presidential candidates trying to reach middle America. I mean, it's actually not, that's not really a conservative cliche, but whatever. He says that the sensitivity was less apparent. It was at the Bermuda Business Development Agency in March 21st, 2019, so a year ago. And he apparently blasted derided Democratic candidates for talking about transgender protections. He's quoted as saying, if your conversation during a presidential election is about some guy wearing a dress and whether he, she, or it can go to the locker room with their daughter, that's not a winning formula for most people, end quote. So how is this going to work? I'm made of questions. How is this going to work? Because isn't that like a big faux pas? Didn't he just do a big bad no-no? Right? Because that's like something that you're not supposed to do. So I'm curious as to how the left is going to, because a lot of the people that are supporting him are the same people that are advocates for this issue. So how bad do you want him? This is where their sincerity is tested. This is totally going to come up in the debate tonight. That's the other thing. I want you to watch how the moderators, like what issues they bring up, particularly with him. Because I'm curious as to, because they've been kind of Biden-Warren. That's who they've liked. But now that Bloomberg's going to be on stage, I'm curious to see who they're going to be more leaning towards. And you're going to know if they start bringing that stuff up, they hate him. Just know that they hate him. That's not the only thing that's, I mean, honestly, that, I don't think that that's a, they tried to immediately say, well, that's, you know, conservative cliche. I still, the way, it's the way that he said it. Can we like sidebar here with this issue? First off, I think that you can disagree about, and I do all the time on the show, about transgenderism and people who are men or women and who want to identify as women or men, respectively. You can talk about it and still be kind and compassionate. That's not being weak. Are you compromising anything by being nice? No. In fact, it's literally the opposite. I mean, if we want to start thumping the Bible here, I'm happy to do that. Like if we want to go, I mean, I've got it marked on my phone. I got notes on my phone. I will pull up 1 Timothy. I will pull up me some Romans 2. You just let me know, because it's literally a measurement of strength. It's so easy, like I said, to like people who like you, like people who think like you, love them even. And that's what you're called to do. So the way he does it is not that. This, if you sift through all of the noise about whether or not they're going to be consistent on how they judge him on this, what does this show you? He is still adding to his record, his behavioral pattern of looking down on people that he thinks are beneath him. He is a classist. He is bigoted towards women, particularly who want to defend themselves using the Second Amendment that they have every right to do. Hi, there are two groups that he has subsidizes and formed that have gone at me and still go at me relentlessly. He looks down on people who are poor. He looks down on individuals who think differently than he does. I mean, I have on my website a whole list of this. He wanted to invite himself via policy into the recovery room, the labor and delivery floor of hospitals, so that he could get moms to breastfeed regardless of any choice or health situation, and make it to where they had to explain themselves if they needed to use formula. This guy is a bigot in every regard. That's the measure by which he should be judged. This issue is a variable. Anyone who is different from him, he looks down on. Now, with that, oh man, I have a story. Oh, I can't wait. Okay, so this is what we're going to get into after headlines. Bloomberg is actually paying people to tweet for him.
What?
Mm-hmm. He's paying people to tweet for him. Let me pull this up, because I've got a number of tweets about this, in fact, of people talking about it everywhere. He's actually hiring people to tweet on his behalf and post regularly on their personal social media accounts and send text messages to their friends about how awesome he is. So not even joking with you right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually, he's doing that. He's bankrolling a social media army. But I thought that bot armies were bad. But so we're going to discuss that after a headline, so you don't want to miss it. In this day and age, it's rare to find people and businesses that stand up for their conservative values. With the backlash they receive, it's easier to stay silent than to voice an opinion. This is where cell phone company Patriot Mobile steps in to break the norm. Patriot Mobile started in 2012 with a promise to offer high-quality mobile phone service at the lowest prices possible and to continuously support American values and conservatism. It does so by donating a portion of your monthly bill to organizations fighting for First and Second Amendment rights, family values, and pro-life causes you and I believe in. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you'll be supporting this program and your values. Use promo code Dana to waive the activation fee and receive a free gift. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Don't forget to use promo code Dana to waive the activation fee and receive a free gift. Patriot Mobile, mobilizing conservatives.
You won't miss any Dana shows by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Should have had my headlines pulled up, but I was too busy dancing to Boy George in the Culture Club. He follows me on Twitter, just FYI. Okay, all right. Let's get this done. This is crazy headline. Might be the craziest headline ever.
Really?
Iowa man allegedly kidnapped a woman and forced her to watch Roots to better understand her racism. Hey. I am not joking. It's originally a New York Post article, and it says that his name is Robert Lee Noy, 52. He was arrested for kidnapping a woman and forcing her to watch Roots, according to Cedar Rapids Gazette. Now, I don't know what race the woman is, and we don't have her name, but there is apparently some documentation from the PD there. But they said that he kidnapped her and held her captive at a residence where she was forced to watch the entire 9-hour ABC miniseries. So, quote, this is the criminal complaint, she could better understand her racism. When she tried to move, Noy ordered her to remain seated and watch the movie with him, or he would kill her and spread her body parts across Interstate 30 on the way to Chicago, end quote, per the complaint.
Oh, man.
I mean, I've heard of being a fan of a movie, but I mean,
Who's the racist in that story?
Yeah. And then I love it that there's like this big old explanation of Roots and the awards that it won in the New York Post. I mean, it's this funny. The way that they did it. The lady who hurt the administration with national security now wants a pardon. And the NSA contractor who leaked classified information on quote unquote Russian interference wants to be pardoned. Her name is Reality Winner. Remember her? Sounds like the name of a horse, like a racehorse, not a human woman. But she was found guilty of leaking classified information to the media. She was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Her attorneys are asking Trump to pardon her. Don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know. I mean, she tried to hurt the president. Now she wants a favor. Canada's having train props. Trudeau has called for patience. Railways have been shut down for 12 days by protesters. There's a lot of discussion as to the pipelines and disrupting native lands, etc. Stick with us.
This portion of the Dana Show is brought to you by Kel-Tec. They don't make ordinary firearms. They invent better ones. Innovation. Performance. Kel-Tec. Visit us at KelTecWeapons.com.
I do make his job harder. I do agree with that. I think that's true. He's a very straight shooter. We have a great attorney general, and he's working very hard. And he's working against a lot of people that don't want to see good things happen, in my opinion. That's my opinion, not his opinion. That's my opinion. You'll have to ask what his opinion is. But
Yeah. So yesterday, sources said that sources told their sources that an official said to the Washington Post, their headline, Barr has told people close to Trump that he's considering quitting over the president's tweets. That's what these sources said. If you want to believe those sources talking about those sources that told them that official said. Just saying. Well, then Barr's people came out this morning and said, that's not true. They denied it. And they said that, no, that's not exactly the DOJ or the Justice Department, same thing, denied the report. Now, there were some whispers that he had thought of it before, because he said that the president's tweets didn't help. And that's what Trump was responding to in that audio soundbite that we played. Bill, a lot of people like William Barr, and there is this general consensus that he is one of the wiser picks, one of the wiser Trump picks. But Carrie Kupek, who is the spokesperson for AG Barr, says, nope, Addressing Beltway rumors, the Attorney General has no plans to resign. Well, no, there's the discussion that it's not a light move to go on television and then address the whole matter and say that the president's tweets aren't helping it. I would imagine that you would have to have taken an inventory of where you are professionally before doing something like that. So I don't know. But William Barr is, he's, like I said, he's a good pick. And it doesn't seem that he has any other desire for any other kind of office. He just wants to do his job. He seems to be of a good humor. And I don't think it would be good if he left. I don't think it would be good that he left at all. But I would imagine that it does make it a little difficult, and that maybe perhaps that was his way of saying, hey, you're, I mean, literally just blatantly saying that your tweets make it hard. And so that's why you have that soundbite with the president. So, and the president too does, I mean, he can comment on certain things with regards to these cases. I mean, that's not wrong. But I think that you also have to take a look at how to best help your case and what you might do that may hurt it, because you don't want to set yourself back. So I, some of this, and I know that he likes Twitter, and it's kind of eliminated almost the need for any kind of press conferences, because he responds to almost, I mean, everything. A reporter can pose a question on Twitter and he can answer it, and has. But it does put Barr in a kind of an odd position because how Trump wants to go one way. And Barr, I think, he's not a pushover, but he has served the president, even when it looks as though he'll push back. And I think with this, he's pushing back a little bit, and that's not a bad thing. Iron sharpens iron. That's how you got to look at it. So this is, I have to, I'm going to make sure I get to these, because this is the story I wanted to get to that I, at the top of the hour that we weren't able to get to. China has revoked the press credentials of three journalists who are with the Wall Street Journal because the newspaper they were critical of China. Well, and specifically, you know, communist China policies. So they revoked their press credentials, and they demanded that the publication apologize for a column that they ran that featured a headline where they called China the, quote, real sick man of Asia, end quote. And that's according to their foreign ministry. The spokesman with Beijing's foreign ministry made, quote, stern representations, says Reuters, to the newspaper over the February 3rd column, in which China was criticized as racist and denigrating in its efforts to combat the coronavirus epidemic. And the paper had failed to apologize or investigate those responsible. China had said that it was racist and it denigrated its efforts. And they said because of their choice to run this, they didn't apologize, were revoking their press cards. Now, the journalists were not identified, but the Wall Street Journal said that its deputy bureau chief, Josh Chin, and two other reporters were ordered to leave the city within 5 days' time. Chin and the other, Chow Deng, are U.S. citizens, and Philip Nguyen is an Australian reporter. And then Pompeo condemned China's action. The Foreign Correspondents Club of China also expressed deep concern and strong condemnation. They said it's Chinese authorities trying to intimidate news organizations. But the Wall Street Journal was not going to compromise on it. This is a real big difference to how Bloomberg's media company responded. Well, I want to share with you this piece that I actually had on the rundown. And then this other piece about the Wall Street Journal, this one ran today. The editor, we know that so far Michael Bloomberg has had his newspaper that he named Bloomberg. They dissolved their editorial board, and they already had the rule to not cover Bloomberg's campaign. I mean, that's a real thing. This is what The Intercept writes, though, about how Bloomberg News reported on China. When Bloomberg News's reporting on China was challenged, Bloomberg tried to ruin me for speaking out. This is the reporter who wrote a story that Beijing didn't like. And she's also one of the women, because there's been a lot of controversy with his non-disclosure agreements. She says, this is how she starts the piece, quote, "I am one of the many women Mike Bloomberg's company tried to silence through non-disclosure agreements. The funny thing is, I never even worked for Bloomberg, but my story shows the lengths that the Bloomberg machine will go in order to avoid offending Beijing. Bloomberg's company, Bloomberg LP, is so dependent on the vast China market for its business that its lawyers threatened to devastate my family financially if I didn't sign an NDA silencing me about how Bloomberg News killed a story critical of Chinese Communist Party leaders. It was only when I hired Edward Snowden's lawyers in Hong Kong that Bloomberg LP eventually called off their hounds after many attempts to intimidate me," end quote. Now, this reporter, and her name is Lita Hong Fincher, she was writing this story about Xi Jinping, who is the president of China. President of China, as though he's like democratically elected. And her husband, his name is Michael Forsyth. He was writing a Bloomberg News piece discussing the wealth that was accumulated by Xi Jinping's relatives. And it was this award-winning series that he was authoring, and it was titled Revolution to Riches, and it was all about Chinese leaders. So Bloomberg News publishes this article on Xi Jinping's family and their accumulation of wealth. And she said this was back in June 2012. And she said not long after that, her husband received death threats that were conveyed by some woman who identified herself as being a relative of Xi Jinping. And the woman mentioned their children and all of this stuff. New Yorker's Evan Osnos reported a similar encounter, she wrote in The Intercept, and his award-winning book, Age of Ambition, Chasing Fortune, Truth, and Faith in the New China. And this apparently same woman confronted Osnos's wife, saying that his family couldn't stay in China anymore. And she discusses how it was unnerving because this was after, she said, just months after the murder of this British businessman, Neil Haywood, who ended up being poisoned by the wife of a senior Chinese leader. And that was according to Chinese state media. They found his body in a hotel somewhere in southwestern China. So she said Bloomberg's executives kept her husband busy in never-ending conference calls about how to maintain security and everything else. And she said that she was silent about it for a few months. And she said she had been loyal to the company. She didn't want to jeopardize his job. But she said then she saw this story that was published. There was another unrelated story she wrote that was published in defiance of the Chinese government. And so that's when she decided to tweet that she had received death threats after Bloomberg News ran that story on Xi Jinping. And hours later, Bloomberg executives were calling her husband saying, your wife needs to delete her tweets, etc. They were trying to do all of this. You need to have this done. So they left Beijing and they moved to an apartment in Hong Kong. She thought it was all over. It started dying down. But nope, apparently it got worse. It ended up getting worse. So there was a company Bloomberg News killed a story that her husband had been writing and pitching them at the last minute. And they said that they couldn't run any stories that were critical on Beijing. They couldn't run any stories that were critical of senior Communist Party leaders, including the families of senior Communist Party leaders, including any relative of Xi Jinping at all whatsoever. And apparently they were saying all of this in an email. And they said, we're not going to continue the series that he was writing. We're not going to do any of this. We're just not going to do it. And that's the end of it. So then this was in November 12, 2013, where Bloomberg, who was then New York City mayor, was asked about that story and reports that his news entity had been censoring stories, corporately censoring stories, because they didn't want to offend China. And his quote was this. He said, quote, nobody thinks we're wusses and not willing to stand up and write stories that are interest to the public. I mean, that's factual. He goes, that are factually correct. So he had that little caveat, factually correct, because they were trying to say that her husband lied in the story. So they tried to, I mean, and this goes through a long process. This went for several years that they fired her husband and they were trying to threaten her to sign an NDA to not talk about this story anymore. And they were threatening them financially unless she signed this NDA to where she wasn't going to talk about how Bloomberg News killed any story that her husband had written that was critical of communist China or Xi Jinping or Beijing, etc. They kept sending her all these legal threats and everything else. And they said that that we would owe the company thousands of dollars if we didn't sign this non-disclosure agreement. That's what she wrote. It just kept going and going and going. And then she lawyered up and it stopped. That's how Michael Bloomberg and his media entity handled threats and bullying from China. The Wall Street Journal chose a different path. If Michael Bloomberg cannot handle that situation with China as it relates to a newspaper, how in the world would he be able to handle China or any other country if, heaven forbid, he became president of the United States? This is the issue that I am most looking forward to seeing come up in tonight's debate. And if the moderators don't ask about it, they're cowards and they're doing all of their viewers a disservice, and they should just let actual people interested in moderating a debate go forward. We have a lot more coming up as we move on, because we got Florida Man up next.
Delivering the truth online and on air. Listen to The Dana Show live on the radio or at danaradio.com or on demand.
It's time for Florida Person. It's time to check what Florida is up to.
We're going to start this edition of Florida Man with a little competition for Florida Man's title. An Indiana man steps up to bat. Will he win it? Let's see. The headline from Fox 4. Indiana man with crime pays tattoo on his forehead, hugely, was arrested after yet another police chase. Oh. It's like on a third of his forehead. Terre Haute, Indiana. An Indiana man with crime pays, just a huge tattoo of it on his forehead, has been arrested after yet another police chase. According to the Terre Haute Police Department, Donald Murray was charged with resisting law enforcement, reckless driving, possession of meth, amphetamine, of course, maintaining a common nuisance, and auto theft. Is that how they described his tattoo? And auto theft after a short pursuit Monday morning. Of course, he went viral after he and his tattoo, they were in his past crimes, they were featured on an episode of Life PD. He was taken into custody. He was originally held without bail, but he ended up being released on his own recognizance. So he's made a lot of bad choices in his life, starting with that tattoo. Mm-hmm. Moving on down the line, he's not the only person who made some bad choices. Like this other Florida man. This Florida man has a bad facial tattoo and two-toned hair that he dyed. I don't understand that. Pasco Sheriff's deputies arrested Luis Joel Velez Rosanaro, 22, for multiple counts of criminal mischief after he admitted to vandalizing buildings in a car with graffiti. And then he also admitted to stupidly returning to the scene of the crime and taking pictures of his quote-unquote artwork, which included things like blank the police, police lies matter, and then, of course, Happy New Year. He was caught on his bicycle in the area. Yeah. Oh, boy. Some Florida robbers, according to the Tampa Bay Times, held up a Clearwater CVS, and they were very, very careful to not get caught for their crime. Some of the precautions that they took included wearing surgical gloves so that they wouldn't get their fingerprints on anything. And, well, they robbed a store of $320,000 in pills, but their precautions apparently fell away after they left the store because they tossed pill bottle after empty pill bottle out of their car all the way back to where they were staying, which was literally a crumb line of pill bottles for police to follow, and that's how they apprehended them. There were two men that they arrested, Christopher Rochelle and David Robbins. And then they found even more evidence on the cell phones of the criminals because it's like they went back to their apartment and just had a pill party where they strew it all over everything, including the bed, the floor, everything else. And then they identified a third individual, Roy Lampkin, as a collaborator, and they took him into custody too. So they're all, they have various charges. Lampkin's charged with two drug trafficking charges and is being held in lieu of $1 million bond. Yeah, that's just, wow. Stick with us. We got a lot more in store, folks.
It's the Dana Show.
I just kind of feel like we have all of this floating around. This has been floating around, all of it, from everybody. This is not new verbiage from Trump. It's not new verbiage from Bloomberg. It's not new verbiage. You know, everybody has stepped in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I guess I can't get freaked out until somebody apologizes for the grabbing by. Apologize. Once you apologize for that, then I'll get mad about everything else.
Well, and we've talked about that. Really? So. It's okay that if it's so offensive to you, then why is it okay that if your side does it? I mean, do we really have to relitigate how it was a private, not public comment, which doesn't make it acceptable, but there is a difference. I get it that nuance is dead and all that, but come on, folks. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, at DLash on Twitter, official Dana Lash on Facebook. Bloomberg is warning Sanders is going to be unstoppable soon. I don't think that you guys understand the situation here. They're really upset about it, and they're warning everybody. In fact, one of the things that Bloomberg had said is maybe you all should just, I don't know, move over and focus on me, which that's not going to happen. It's the socialist moment. Sanders is dominating this ABC poll and Washington Post poll. He's leading. Well, yeah, it's, and so Bloomberg is saying, look, you guys should just get out of the race and just endorse me. Come on now. This was his warning that he, and well, and Kevin Sheehy, his top strategist, was saying this as well. He says, I don't think people understand the dire circumstances here. Yes, that's why you should have as many quote unquote moderates or just non-socialist in the primary as possible. So you can dilute that non-socialist vote. Make sure you do that. I mean, heaven forbid anyone sacrifice their own ego since it's so concerning to you. You're so worried about having a socialist lead the polling. You realize that y'all are like, you're contributing to that because all the non-socialist votes have to be divided up amongst the other five candidates. Herp derp. Telling you what. Heaven forbid. Nate Silver's 538 had some projections going through Super Tuesday, and it shows Sanders, his projections, he's been wrong before, so again, this is like ridiculous speculation, but it showed him, if he does well in Super Tuesday, he would take 41% of the delegates. And then you have all the rest of them. Bloomberg at 18, Biden at 18, Buttigieg at 10, Warren at 8, and Klobuchar at 4. They'll divide up everyone else. And they all say that, oh, well, this is a serious, well, except for Warren, and kind of Buttigieg too, doesn't really. But they say it's such a serious issue, that he should be stopped. But Bloomberg decided to add another person into the race instead of solidifying support behind another candidate that has less of an ego. Really? That was his... You're going to dilute the non-socialist vote more? They're not the brightest crayons in the box, these folks. Not at all. My heavens. And then we've got, there's a lot here. I want to get to some of the audio that we have. You have audio soundbite 11, Bernie Sanders. He wants to control your rent. Listen.
I spent my entire childhood in a rent-controlled apartment in Brooklyn, New York. And that meant that my family, at least, we didn't have a lot of money, but we didn't have to worry about rents, going up by 10-15%, which many Americans do. We believe that rent control is an appropriate tool nationally to tell landlords that they cannot simply jack up their rents to any rate that they want.
So now he wants to nationalize property. Well, don't sit here and tell me that he's a socialist. He's a communist. He's a communist who says he's a socialist. I'm telling you.
It's democratic socialist.
Yeah, democratic socialism is like putting glitter on a turd. Just, we need to realize this and acknowledge it. That's just exactly what it is. It is that very thing. Yeah, that's, okay, so now he's like going, now he's just, he doesn't even care anymore. He's in the lead. He's a communist. He's a communist. And he's at, he, if he does well on Super Tuesday, I don't know what Democrats are going to do. They've waited too long to really to do anything about it. They've waited too long. So I'm not sure. I mean, it's weird because Bloomberg is on, he's on the debate stage tonight for Nevada, but he's not on the ballot for the Nevada caucus. He's not even going to be on a ballot until Super Tuesday. He's missing the South Carolina primary next week. That's on Tuesday. So he's missing that primary. And if he's wanting, if his people, Kevin Sheehy, his top strategist, if he's telling everyone, and this is the statement that he sent out, the fact is, quote, the fact is if the state of the race remains status quo with Biden, Pete, and Amy in the race on Super Tuesday, Bernie is likely to open up a delegate lead that seems nearly impossible to overcome. I don't think people understand the dire circumstances here. If Biden, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar remain in the race despite having no path to appreciably collecting delegates on Super Tuesday and beyond, they will propel Sanders to a seemingly insurmountable delegate lead by siphoning votes away from Bloomberg. Again, how in the hell are they getting votes away from him? Because he's not on a ballot. He hasn't been. He's not going to be until March 3rd. What kind of JV team does he have running this? You don't, you still don't, you're not convinced that he thinks that he is the most entitled person on God's green earth? Here's a prime example of it. I mean, so for the next, he's not on the ballot for 2 more weeks. And then his guy is literally sending emails out and these PDFs to other Democrats saying, oh, well, your people need to get out of the race and not siphon votes away from Mike, even though Mike has not earned any votes because he's literally never been on the ballot yet, not been on the ballot. But they're acting like somehow everyone else is the Johnny come lately to the primary and not Michael Bloomberg. He is, and there's, and the memo also said that he is the clear number two based on vote share. Again, he has not, his name hasn't been on a ballot. No one has voted for him. None of this is. This is just literally polls. You don't become the nominee based on polls. You become the nominee based on votes and delegates. So how in the world are they, how are they saying this? This is so ridiculous. I mean, it, the, I mean, and looking at the polling in some of the states, he's not even, he's not number two. Yeah, if they, if Democrats care more about, I think that their concern for party over everything hits a wall when it is their ego involved, because if it was party over everything, then these individuals would not continue to expand these non-socialist options in the primary. They would do everything that they could to narrow the field down to Bernie and not Bernie, but they're not. Yeah, I mean, this is just, this is kind of crazy. I'm just looking at some of the latest numbers on this as well, but it's just, it's odd. He is a, he is, will go over horribly. If he were to be the guy that would go up head to head with Trump, I don't, he is so unlikable. He's going to make Trump look more likable. Right? He is, Michael Bloomberg is so unlikable that he'll make Trump look even better to even Democrats, honestly, because there are a bunch of Democrats that don't like Michael Bloomberg. So that's where, that'll be, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be one interesting debate. And you know that one of the candidates, I don't know who it's going to be. It'll be Warren or Sanders, probably. I don't know. I don't know who. What, one of them is going to remind him that he hasn't won a single vote. One of them is going to bring it up. Now, in the meantime, Bloomberg has been bankrolling a social media army, says Wall Street Journal. They're paying workers $2,500 per month to promote Bloomie to all of their contacts. He's trying to buy himself influence. He's trying to game the system and buy himself influence. Meanwhile, Sanders has a double-digit lead. And you know these stories that come out about Bloomberg doing this just make him look even worse? The guy has no self-awareness. None. It's just, it is just, ugh. And I don't know, how does that work in California? Because aren't they now making it illegal for anybody to be contracted workers? So how does this work in California? Because in California, one of the bills that they passed, companies can only have like X amount of workers, and then they have to hire people full time. So then they've been firing all these people, and all these people who did everything from makeup artists to freelance writers to, you know, playwrights to actors, all of this, they're all getting hit and they're all mad because they didn't see this coming, apparently. Tell you what, it is going to be something tonight. So some of the other headlines that we have here, I have to touch on this really quickly. Have you guys seen some of this, the news with the locusts and everything else? Yeah. This is like some Ghostbusters stuff, right? At the end of Ghostbusters 2, when they're talking about the end of times. Now, I'm not saying that's what this is, but it is creepy. I keep seeing the stuff that they had. I actually just read a story where an army of locusts devoured entire farms in Africa in 30 seconds is what, and this is one of the things that is, it's National Geographic, but they're saying that this is what National Geographic, a left-leaning entity, published. A plague of locusts has descended on East Africa, and they say climate change, but they say that, which they said it's like something seen out of the book of Exodus. They're the ones, they've been reporting that giant swarms of locusts have been just devouring farms and pasture lands, crops, everything in 7 East African countries in like a matter of hours. They say it's like nothing in recent memory. There's specifically desert locusts, and they're everywhere now. And they have a map showing where all these things are going. So you have the locust thing, and then you have the bizarre weather patterns. Like they had a 209 mile per hour wind gust that hit California. Then we have all the flooding. Like everybody's seen all the crazy images and video from Jackson, Mississippi, where you got people down there watching their homes flood, their residences just taken over. Pearl River crested. Monday, 36.8 feet, highest level ever recorded. Behind 79 and 83. And then there are earthquakes and cats and dogs living together. Okay, not that one, but. And then all these different bird flus, and then the coronavirus. Just saying. It's just kind of weird. It's a great way to start out 2020, right? Roaring 20s. We got a lot more to come. Coming up, we're going to talk to one of the big things that that the administration has hit on, and that a lot of other Republicans have hit on, human trafficking and the best ways to combat that. We're going to talk to some law enforcement about that here coming up. The sheriff of Tarrant County. We've got that and so much more, so don't miss a second.
Grab the digital archives and enjoy The Dana Show on the go through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss.
It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so the UK has shut the door to unskilled migrants, according to Politico. The British government told employers to adjust not being able to recruit low-skilled workers from Europe. They say they will not create a visa route for low-skilled migrants and temporary workers in a post-Brexit immigration system. They say that top priority will be given to those who have the highest skills, including scientists, engineers, and academics, which is actually how it should be. They said that according to the EU, that they were saying that employers will need to adjust because they will not be able to recruit these unskilled workers. But the government seems to be fairly certain that they're not going to have any problem recruiting people into certain positions at all whatsoever. Biden suggests not paying Brazil $20 billion to, or suggests paying Brazil $20 billion to not cut down trees. This comes by way of Twitchy and Twitter. In fact, he had said that maybe we should lead an effort to pay countries to not cut down their trees. Listen to this.
Dick Lugar used to be a senator from a neighboring state, a Republican, was a good friend of mine. He and I introduced the first bill that said we will trade you debt for environment. If you don't cut down your forest, we will not charge you, we will not collect the money you owe us, because it benefits all of humanity if you keep
good
those.
Grief. He says $20 billion, not $2 billion, to not cut down their trees. Okay, yeah, let's not. Japan enters a new phase of a coronavirus outbreak, according to their media. The number of coronavirus cases in Japan has now reached over 500, including 454 from a cruise ship docked near Tokyo. The health ministry is scrambling to come up with measures to limit the outbreak, but infections continue to emerge in prefectures around the country. Officials are also struggling to identify infection routes in at least four of the cases. We have a lot more coming up, including the Tarrant County Sheriff, Bill Wayburn, will join us because he is discussing how law enforcement is combating human trafficking with a new initiative. Stick with us.
Missed anything from the show? Subscribe to Dana's Daily Podcast by subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
DanaLash.com. At D. Lash on Twitter, official Dana Lash on Facebook, and make sure you pre-order Grace Canceled. My new book is out next week, and you can do that through the website. We talked about this story when it happened. Unlike many of these cases that are similar, we didn't have all of the footage that we do, the camera footage, etc. Do you remember that story in Fort Worth when Fort Worth police, they had rescued an 8-year-old girl who had been kidnapped off the street? This was like about a year ago. And that everybody, not just in Texas, but I think everybody around the country was following this story because it began with someone's, they had like a Blink camera or something that was one of their cameras on their front porch, caught the moment that this girl had been snatched up in the street. And her mom was screaming, it like happened right in front of her. And she was trying to chase the car. And the door cameras, their video footage, it had all of this. It was the most terrifying thing ever. Broad daylight, middle of the afternoon. And police rescued her. It was a first person look too, because they all had their cameras on, their shoulder cams on. And it was just a heart stopping. It's like every parent's worst nightmare. And it feels like issues like this and really human trafficking in general, because obviously this is what was going to be this child's fate. That man ended up, he was obviously apprehended, Michael Webb. He was sentenced to life in prison for kidnapping this girl. And this, like I said, it brings up this issue of human trafficking and how unbelievably prevalent this heinousness is. And it's something that the president has touched on when he's discussed it, whether it's State of the Union or some of his rallies that he has. And he discusses, you know, really, it's dangerous work. And there's an initiative right now that's ongoing. That's something that's been spearheaded by Sheriff Bill Wayburn, who is the sheriff for Tarrant County, that is targeting the illegal trade of humans, like human beings, with human trafficking. And he joins us now on the phone, actually by Skype, to talk about it. Sheriff, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Good to see you, Dan.
Of course. Tell us how prevalent this problem is, because this is one of those, and I think that's one of the reasons why that story that I gave you, that example, and similar stories like that, really hit home with people, because they think it's a problem. When you hear the phrase human trafficking, you think that that's a problem that other areas have, that other countries have. But no, it actually, in suburban Texas, parts of the DFW Metroplex, there's the problems with human trafficking. How prevalent is it?
Well, it's a lot more prevalent. There's one study that shows there's 300,000 people in Texas that are being trafficking. And out of that, about 79,000 are children. And a lot of it is for sex trafficking, and some of it is for labor trafficking. We've rescued people out of both. And, you know, we're finding the average age of our sex traffickers started about 14. And often these people come from our forgotten children. You know, a lot of people do think they're from exotic countries and away from us. No, no, it's right here. It's 95% domestic.
Wow.
And we were finding these kids and these adults in human trafficking. And we stood up a unit in 2017, right after I got in office. It's been tremendously successful, with probably now close to over right at 200 arrests and probably some 100 rescues.
That's
and
unbelievable.
So it's here.
Yeah, it is. It is here. And it's terrifying to think that, you know, as you're going about your day, you're driving to work, you're going to the grocery store, you're going to the park with your family, maybe going to watch a kid play football or something, that here in the area that in which you live, you know, you're everybody's nice, picture perfect suburbia, wherever they are, that you have such this infestation of the heinousness that is human trafficking. As I understand it, there was a recent big bust where 41 other suspects were arrested. I have to say, I like your quote here, Sheriff, because you say that there's criminals in our state and country, and we're going to go after them with the gust of a hound dog. I like that quote.
Well, thank you. And we are. We are going after them with the gust of a hound dog, and we did arrest 41 in our latest predator sting. And out of that 41, several of them were children predators, and I believe that three of them were illegal aliens from out of the country. So it's a mixed bag. And these people come from all walks of life when we talk about predators. The problem is the demand is here also.
Oh, my gosh. And that's the real big problem. It's one thing to say we're going to go after the people who are really kidnapping or forcing these individuals to do this awfulness against their will. And so often it's children. It is another thing to combat the thing that's fueling this. I don't want to call it a business, but this awful dark market trafficking. How do you even begin to combat something like that?
Well, is that our agents or undercover officers, they go where they go. They dive in where these people typically, where we discover where they're going. And we use all of our partner, federal partners and local partners, along with some nonprofits that help us out.
Right.
And they, so we use all of those, and all of those are source. Texas right now is the second largest tip state, meaning that we get more tips. We're only number two behind California right now.
Wow.
So
that's good.
Here.
That's good that people are looking out, they're keeping their eyes open, and I keep going back to that one case, because there was that footage, and we could put a face and we could put the mother's cries with this story, which you normally can't do. And I think that that's why it seems like it is so far away, because you read ages and everyone thinks that, I mean, it's awful. But then when you see that video footage that we saw, like in Fort Worth, in that particular case, that really, it makes it incredibly personal, even if it's not your child, because parents see their child in everybody. What happens after these people are arrested, and after these people who have been trapped in this human trafficking, they're rescued? Because that there begins another job. You have a bunch of people who have been victimized who now need to go through a recovery process. But what about the deterrence for these individuals? I mean, you might say, Sheriff, I'm a little old west. I think these people should hang publicly who are involved in doing this, and that we ought to put it on pay-per-view and raise some revenue to as restitution for some of these victims. But what is the deterrent for that? What is the penalty for some of these individuals? And I realize that based on their crimes, it may vary, but I would hope that it's so incredibly strong that it's just under death.
Well, I appreciate your sentiments. It is the scourge of the earth. I say it's evil walking boldly among us, almost from a biblical perspective, how demonic this thing is. But we have seen, in federal court, you saw the fellow you just talked about. He got life in prison. That's real life. He's not going to breathe free air again in his life. We have seen as high as life. And we've also seen from our state district attorney here, Sharon Wilson, we've seen up to 40 years and 45 years in some of these cases where we've gotten convictions on some of these bad people.
Yeah.
So they are going away for a while.
A while.
And,
that's good.
As long as I'd like to see, but for a while.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why we need to have some more Wayburn policies out there and out in the sheriff's office in Tarrant County also. But we need to kind of adapt that for some other places for these deterrents. The innocents that are now recovering from this. What resources? Who helps them? Because that's also a huge job. Tell me a little bit about that, because for a lot of people, the story kind of ends when the bad guy is arrested.
And that's when their story really begins, is that we are in partnership with some of these nonprofits, including Unbound and Valiant Heart and Traffic 911 and All Church Homes here in Tarrant County. And they have taken in both children and adults. And what they do is they give them security. That's the first thing. Give them some security, a place to be, a place to begin restoration. And they've had some good luck with it, where we have a group now of women that are out of that they're getting their education, they're getting in the workforce, they're becoming independent, contributing adults, and living a life far outside of this evil that they were once drug into. So there is help going on.
What can people do in their areas to work with law enforcement to help combat this? Because, you know, we always, and we're grateful to have good people wearing the badge like yourself, Sheriff. But I also know that it's incredibly taxing, not just on resources, but emotionally and spiritually taxing to deal with this. Because this is one of the most basest of evils that's out there. How can people help?
Well, you know, I will tell you very plainly from Bill Wayburn perspective is you said it. You, for our people, for our agents that are out there doing the work, that are in the mud with these people, we need your prayers. If you're praying people, we'll take those. The second thing is that, folks, if you see something that isn't right where you're at, please call it in. If your gut feeling tells you that person doesn't belong with that person, let us get an opportunity to check that out. The third thing is get involved with one of these, with a good nonprofit that may be able to, where you can be a lay counselor, where you can donate money. So there's several things to do there also.
Well, good. I'm glad that, I'm so glad that we have these organizations and so many of these nonprofits that are involved in this. Where can people go online? I know I have an email, but where can people go online if they want more information, or maybe there's another nonprofit out there who's watching, who's listening, says they want to partner up, if not in Texas, in their particular state. Where can they go for more information?
Well, they can go to our Texas Attorney General's website. Ken Paxton is a great partner, and they have a great website on this, and they have training on there for what to watch for.
That's really good.
And we also, you can contact us, and we'll try to connect you.
Before I let you go, that was something very important that you just mentioned, training on what to watch for. What's the big thing to watch for?
The thing that I think you're going to see, that the biggest thing is that a mom like yourself, you've got those mom eyes, and you see something that doesn't mm-hmm. look right. A young lady that's out of place with somebody, that is going to be the first thing that you see, is follow your gut instinct in that, and everything will be just fine. It'll be okay.
There you go. That mama instinct. I'm telling you something. There's a reason why we got it. Sheriff Bill Wayburn, it's always such a pleasure. We thank you for everything that you do for not just Tarrant County, but for really just the law enforcement that you represent as well. And on behalf of, you know, these victims that y'all are helping and helping to rescue. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time with us today.
Thank you, Dana, and God bless you.
God bless you. Good to see you, Sheriff. Yeah, that's, I'm telling you, that mama intuition, that mama gut feeling. There was a story that this was probably about 3 or 4 years ago, and it wasn't in Texas. I want to say it was in Indiana or Ohio, and there was a woman who was a gas station clerk, and I think this was in our headlines, and we ended up coming back to it and talked about it, but she was a gas station clerk. She ended up stopping one of these predators that had this, the girl was an older teenager, but a minor still. And something did not sit right with her. And this woman was a mother, and she had children. And it was just that gut instinct that kept really, she was watching the whole thing, and the girl came inside to use the restroom, and it didn't sit right with her. And she ended up intervening and contacted law enforcement, and they ran, as the story went, this predator down. and they rescued this girl who had been with this guy who and was being, against her will, trafficked. Just awful. But it's that intuition. There's something about mother's intuition that is just unbeatable. All right, we have more to come. We got Today in Stupidity on the way. As we get moving on, our good friends at Kel-Tec.
Head to DanaRadio.com for the latest videos, blog posts, and podcasts.
So, you know, I don't mind that he has this money. That's a great thing that he made that money. But we want to make sure that we have the best candidate to lead the ticket. And I don't think that when people look at Donald Trump, they automatically say, can we get someone richer? I just don't think that's what they say.
That's Amy Klobuchar. They may not. You know that all the wealth of the billionaires is going to come up in the debate tonight as well, which I'm going to watch. I'll have a write-up at danalash.com, so you can go there. And while you were there, pre-order your copy of my book, Grace Canceled. It comes out next week. And we were talking a little bit about what it discusses just a little bit earlier when we were touching on that Pete Buttigieg audio, where he was basically asking if you can, well, not asking, he was rendering a decision as to whether or not you could be Christian and still vote for Trump. And I'm just, but there's a lot of good stuff in this. And it was quite challenging to write, and it'll be fun to read. So I hope you do. I hope you go and pre-order it. And tomorrow, I'm going to give away a copy. Yay! Every hour. Well, we'll see. I'm going to give away a copy tomorrow, though. I'll send you info. I'll have info up at danalash.com on how to participate. I'll put the number up there. So make sure you listen. All right, I got to play these two things by AOC, unless I'm stealing one of them from you. Were you going to use one of them? Okay, keep which one you want to use. And then play the one that I can have.
All right, I'll play this.
Because there's two sound bites that
I'll
are
away. I'll play 31 for you.
Okay, yay.
All right, here we go.
The thing is that if the amount of money that you have can force the DNC to change their rules, but the DNC would not change their rules for Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Kamala Harris, that is an actualization of power. And we all know how I feel about billionaires. I don't think that in a place where 60% of Americans can't even, you know, make more than $40,000 a year, that the presence of a billionaire who largely makes their money off of businesses underpaying their workers like Walmart, like Amazon, like on, should exist.
Yeah, she doesn't think they should exist. That's not up for you to decide. She was actually right in the beginning, and then she messed it all up.
Yeah.
She was actually totally right in the beginning. Let's say this because I want to talk more about this tomorrow. And then she messed it all up in the end. They're not underpaying people. It's the market. You are indicting yourself in that. All right, Today in Stupidity.
In the never-ending effort for the left to make private insurance the bad guy, AOC is out there trying to push that same narrative. Here she is. People just don't love their Blue Cross Blue Shield.
So I think that if we're talking about our normal healthcare plans, I think people like their doctors.
Yeah.
I don't know if people love Blue Cross Blue Shield. And
okay.
I did.
Yeah, and I do. So
there you go.
There it is.
Yeah, there you have it. Thanks. That's just so out of touch. All right, folks, that does it for us today. I'll be giving away a copy of Grace Canceled tomorrow, and I'll be on Fox and Friends in the 7 a.m. Central hour. Have a great night.